either it's really clear or it's absolutely not clear. It's one of them. So.
With respect to Wagner, and is he is that one of the things he is noted for? The no end and no beginning. I'm not phrasing it right.
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying. I see what you're saying. I mean, yeah, it's a style. It's something that is. I mean, first of all, if you're gonna start and end too much, have like this kind of you know pieces of music inside pieces of music, and the whole spiel takes about 3.5, 4, or 5, or even 12 hours if it's like you put all the four ring of the Nibelungen together. It's like 12 hours of music, you know. It would be hard. I mean, it's almost obvious that when you get to that length and that kind of thing, time is what we're saying is different. So it is not. I mean, he has many pieces that do have endings and all that, but eventually, if you're going to really compose that long, you are possibly, I think it would happen to anyone. It's just that he's really the first one who did it in incredibly high quality of music, for sure. So, and it comes back in other compositions of his, certainly. Anyway, so it's 1:02 in my computer. So, formally, officially, welcome everybody. Welcome back. Nice to be here. It's Tuesday afternoon.
Nice to be with you.
Very, very nice. Absolutely. Great. Really fun and good. So we worked this week and tried to prepare a different, you know, in a way, there are connections to what we were talking, either the same or exactly the opposite. We'll talk about that. But as we mentioned, we are going to talk about Oscar Niemeyer and Brasília, the city of Brasília and the symphony of Brasília, which is two very unusual things.
Okay.
Number one, how many cities do you know that... So somebody has a microphone which is unmuted and is making sort of noises. Please mute it, because I can. Yeah, that's great. Thank you. So how many of you really know a city that you know that was planned, and before that there was nothing? That was, you know, somebody had the idea, okay, we're going to make a city here, and there is nothing right now, and we're going to start from now. And in a little more than 3 years, we are going to inaugurated in the middle of the 20th century.
The only thing I can think of is
I knew it.
Disney World.
But Disney World is not a city.
It's a swamp.
But I know, but it's inside a city. I'm talking about a city. There was nothing, absolutely nothing, nothing, like a huge field.
How about Brasília?
That's the one that I'm talking. Exactly. Do you know? But so that's why we're talking about it tonight, today, right? But other than that, you know one. I know you know. I guess you guys are not gamblers. Yes, I know. Now I know you know.
It was the desert.
Exactly. Yeah, right. It's the same thing. So basically, that's what happened. So it really was built from nothing. And so the president of Brazil, for many reasons, decided in this, his name was Kubitschek. And so he decided, he was a modern person, and he wanted to bring progress to Brazil. And he said, we need a modern city. We need something that works. And it's, and Matt was going to talk a lot more about this. So he really said, we're going to bring people, you know what, how many people, just workers, to start Brasília. From where? How do you even bring that many people to build up those incredible buildings that Matt is going to talk about, and streets, and bridges, and I'm not sure even there are bridges, but no, whatever it is, the whole infrastructure, to start, he brought 60,000 workers from all over Brazil to work. From, you know, I mean, just like that, in the 50s. I mean, it's not, even today would be maybe easier with all the, you know, roads and everything. We're talking about the 50s, and in the middle of Brazil, in central Brazil, where there is about nothing. It's like talking about the middle of where? What state here? Montana or something like that. Yeah, or Vegas. But Vegas still has, you know, Utah and California around. I mean, in the middle of Montana, you're going to build a city in 19, maybe in the States would be 1920s or something like that. That's the proportion of what we're talking about. So, and then he, the president invited two, you know, famous musicians, Brazilian musicians at the time, Jobim and a poet, Vinicius de Moraes. If those of you don't know him, probably know Girl from Ipanema. Girl from Ipanema is, the music is by Jobim and the lyrics by Moraes. So these two people were, he brought them to Brasilia, to where there was nothing at that time, was being built, to look, to feel, and to try to bring into music that city. And there is something not so well known by Jobim. I'm not even going to ask if you know Girl from Ipanema. I'm sure you do. And if any of you who don't, after this, just go immediately Google it and listen to it. But I don't think there is. And so basically they wrote a symphony. And that's really what we're going to talk about today. To start, we are going to, let me just have a little short movie about Brasília, about the music, that you're going to see at least four main characters, it's a real documentary. Jobim, who wrote the music, Vinicius de Moraes, the poet who wrote the text, because this symphony has a real spoken text. There is Oscar Niemeyer, who is the architect of Brasília, and Lúcio Costa, who is the urban planner of the city. So those are the four main people of our lecture today. Anything you want to say, Matt, for now? The movie will say it all. So here it is. See you in a few minutes back. It's not this one. Let's go back to here. Here it is. Okay.
I can hardly hear it.
Really? Hmm. Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's good. Tell me. No, it's important. Is it better now?
Yes, it is.
Good.
No princípio era o ermo. Eram antigas solidões sem mágoa, o altiplano, o infinito descampado.
That's what it was, Brasília.
No princípio era o agreste. O céu azul, a terra vermelho pungente e o verde triste do cerrado.
Jobim. He loves birds.
Mas toda manhã, a gente levantava cedo, Vinícius e eu. Aqui, né, isso tudo era um sertão, né? Planalto deserto, né? Só tinha bicho aqui. Cascavel, perdiz. Toda manhã a gente escutava as perdizes cantando.
Minhas lembranças de Brasília. Lembro primeiro a terra vazia, hostil, sem uma árvore, sem uma mulher. Depois, o trabalho começando, a cidade se delineando, os prédios começando a surgir pouco a pouco, e a campanha contra Brasília. Quer dizer, uma campanha horrível, cheia de mentiras, negando tudo. E Juscelino a resistir com a sua vontade de ferro e o trabalho continuando. E nós, empenhados naquela missão como uma grande cruzada, tínhamos um prazo certo a cumprir. E finalmente, a cidade construída, a inauguração, a cidade festejada, nós satisfeitos com o trabalho feito, a esperança cumprida. E agora e depois, então, vieram esses anos de escuridão, e isso foi o que ocorreu em Brasília.
E no mato tinha o Jaó, né, que há pouco escutamos lá. O Jaó.
Jaó is a bird.
Vi um bando de tucanos assim, posava aí nessa mata. Aí nesse mato tem um riacho muito bonito. E toda manhã, assim, a gente trabalhava muito, né, na sinfonia. Toda manhã eu saía por aqui, varava esse mato aqui, e assim andava mais ou menos um quilômetro, saía no campo limpo. Depois voltava, né, tomava café, ia pro piano trabalhar, né, o Vinícius trabalhava no texto, e eu trabalhava na música. E amanhã a gente vai fazer isso lá nos Três Poderes, né, lá na praça, né, no...
Tratava-se agora de construir. E construir em ritmo novo. Para tanto, era necessário convocar todas as forças vivas da nação. Todos os...
Just for you to understand, this is something that happened 25 years after the inauguration of Brasília, 25 years after they wrote the piece, they went back to the city, and that's why Jobim is much older than, and they redid the symphony with the local orchestra, and this is a rehearsal, and in this time, Jobim himself is the speaker, the narrator of the symphony, and he reads the text, that's why we're going to see. I just want to put some context in what we're seeing.
Que com vontade de trabalhar e confiança no futuro pudessem erguer um tempo novo, um novo tempo. E a grande convocação que conclamava o povo para a gigantesca tarefa começaram a chegar de todos os cantos da imensa pátria os trabalhadores. Boa viagem! Boca do Acre, Água Branca, Vargem Alta, Amargosa.
These are names of very small little villages around Brazil where workers came from to work in that, the construction of the city.
Chique Chique, Cruz das Almas, Campinas, Canoinhas, Porto Belo, Passo Fundo, Cruz Alta, que foram chegando de todos os lados da imensa pátria para construir uma cidade branca e pura, uma cidade de homens felizes.
De uma coisa apenas eu estou certo. Eu concebi essa cidade visando que as crianças fossem felizes, uma cidade em que as crianças se sentissem bem e fossem felizes.
Como uma flor naquela terra agreste e solitária.
Uma cidade erguida em plena solidão do descampado.
Como uma mensagem permanente de graça e poesia.
Meu desejo que a arquitetura se destacasse branca, como que flutuando na imensa escuridão do Planalto.
Nascida do gesto primário de quem assinala o lugar ou dele toma posse, dois eixos que se cruzam em ângulo reto, ou seja, o próprio sinal da cruz.
Deste planalto central, desta solidão que em breve se transformará em cérebro das altas decisões nacionais, lanço os olhos mais uma vez sobre o amanhã do meu país e antevejo esta alvorada com fé inquebrantável e uma confiança sem limite no seu grande destino.
Okay, the rest is music, and we're going to listen to this later because I'm going to talk about what the music is all about. So this is a general idea. So what happened with the musicians, and you saw actually the architect and the planner, urban planner of the whole thing. So now I'll let Matt talk about what really happened in the, you know, in the construction, in the whole yeah, it's all here. So, Matt, you have the word.
Let me pull up my slides.
Right, it's down here.
Yep.
Okay, you want to share the screen? Or you want to talk about
it? Yeah, no. Go ahead and share.
All right, here we go. So, you should be seeing now. Now we're going to see this city as it is today.
So, can you see the slides? Mm-hmm. So the what's interesting, as Flavio was saying, with Brasilia, is that it's this city that's created out of nothing. Like we just saw in the clip there by Jobim was saying, this windswept infinity. And if you can imagine this question that was put forth by the architect and planner, Costa and Niemeyer, is that how do you build a city out of nothing, with no history, really, is what's no human history. So you have this place that there's no context to draw from. You're basically laying this out. And so one of the tropes that was happening at this time period all around the world by some of the modernists that were out there working was this idea of an ideal city. And this concept of an ideal city was put forth by many thinkers out there, one of which, Le Corbusier, who was Lucio Costa's apprentice underneath Corbusier in his studies. And so a lot of his ideas that Corbusier was pushing in Europe was being picked up in Brasilia. And so we're seeing here, this is an image of the design that Costa put forth in the competition. There was an international competition, over 5,000 entries from all over the world for the design of Brasilia. He won this competition with this drawing here that we're seeing. And as alluded to in the film that we just watched, it had this metaphor of a plane being kind of like this symbol of the future. And one of his ideas was that he wanted to create this city that looks towards the future, that becomes the future. And so in this, he drew from Corbusier's concepts of this ideal city. We're seeing here a design that Corbusier had for Paris, and not to go too deep into this, but the concept was that they would basically wipe out a large portion of Paris and rebuild it with this new these new buildings, and it's these large blocks, housing blocks, to accommodate the people and the businesses. This developed into a further concept that he then tried to push beyond Paris around the world, and you're seeing these again, these repeated blocks that are carried through. And this was picked up very much in this image that we're seeing here, these blocks that we'll get in a little bit more depth as we go along here, on the wings of the plane here that we see. But the initial concept of the idea for his design was this. He took a cross, the Brazil being very religious in nature at the base. And he took that cross and he distorted it by putting a bow or a curve in the cross length, and then created this form that's got this metaphor for the plane, various other birds, various other things that have been alluded to. But this informed really the layout of the city. And so within this, one other side note I just wanted to point out here that's also of interest is the UN here in New York City was also designed by Niemeyer and Corbusier. The two worked kind of in tandem on the design of this. And I point this out because it has some reference to this this sketch here that Costa put together, this curved arced element. We see that in the roof line of the UN here, the assembly building. And if we look at overhead plan, you also in plan, the building has that arc. We see it in the urban planning of the streets that kind of form the plot for the UN. And so all of these elements are things that we're going to see in Brasilia, this concept of urban planning and architecture melded together. But most significantly, what was interesting in the UN plan was this open space here, this plaza, this green space that extended Manhattan to the river, unobstructed by any buildings. And this was something that Corbusier was not in favor of. He wanted to kind of fill the space with these blocks. This slab here, vertical slab, was his contribution to the design. In Niemeyer's idea, he said that that beauty will come from the buildings being in the right space. And so this organization in this composition of buildings in open space, creating these voids, was just as significant as the physical buildings themselves. And so this is really what we find in Brasilia, was this concept. Kind of on an overview, this is looking down, a satellite view of the area. And you can see here, this is the, you can see the outline here of the plane, this sketch that Costa put together of the line, the main central boulevard here, and then the cross axis here that has the curvature. And also significantly is that one of the first steps that was done to the right here was a dam that was put in place to flood this area and create a lake, a man-made lake. And so you can see here off to the right, this dam was put in place, creating this man-made lake, which then also became kind of a metaphor for this, not only the plane, but for the bird, this bird that's coming to the water, which is an idea that I think Flavio will touch on as well in the music as we get into that. Looking at this here, you can see again this the overlay of the city and the way that it's organized. We'll go through it here very briefly. Some of the buildings, the main axis, the main boulevard here, is a green space. Again, you see the plaza that is that's created that to create this almost like the mall that we have in DC. But then at the head of the plane here at this end, the we have the National Congress, which is the key point. The layout here, which has the Congress as well as the court and the presidential office. These three buildings were really kind of the tripart design or the composition of the space, them creating and defining then this open plaza between them. And we even see that here on the cover art of the album cover from the symphony that was created. We see this little sketch here that was done, this eyeball here showing a vantage point of a perspective, and we see the National Congress here, the Supreme Court building, and then the Presidential Plaza. And then this is the elevation then is that's rendering that image that you're seeing from this perspective. This is in plan here on the left, and then this is the National Congress building here on the right. And we see that here in full view, and this is made up of the dome shape here on the left, as well as the kind of the inverted dome or the basket on the right. These are the Senate and the assembly halls, as well as the vertical structure here for the secretariat as far as the office function. See it in plan here as well. You can see the assembly halls. The organization of the assembly halls in plan in the circular shape, which is what's kind of defining the dome shape, as well as the almost like the on the right hand side in a theater with the basket shape inverted dome that's created by the seating that's organized.
One important thing is that one of these, and I don't remember exactly which one it is, but one is the Senate and one is Congress.
The Senate's on the left.
Okay, it's smaller, of course. It right. has less senators. It makes total sense. So basically, and there is this corridor that it's an internal corridor that you can go from one to the other. So,
yeah, and so to that point, it's interesting that the function of these spaces, the Senate as well as the Congress having more members in numbers requires more space for seating. And so that almost kind of informs this dome and this basket shape that we see on the exterior. strikingly, the modern aspect of this, of just the very simple, pure form, to the point where it becomes almost abstract. You see just the almost like an abstract composition painting, to where you see the strong horizontal line contrasted with the curvature again of the dome, the ramp leading up to this raised plateau, and then the vertical beyond, in contrast to the horizontal. And these elements, these strong lines, were compositionally something that was borrowed from Corbusier, that had much significance to it, and just the way to organize and compose physically the space. But I also wanted to point out here in this image, you can see this man here walking across this elevated plateau, and you can see in stark contrast just the minimalist aspect of the way, not only in the level of ornamentation is sparse, very modern in style, but also just the enormity of scale. Brasilia is something that really has no comparison around the world as far as just the way the scale has been enlarged, much larger than a traditional city block. Just for comparison's sake, the wings of the airplane is the length of Manhattan Island from tip to tip. And so proportionally per scale, it's the city is the size of New York. But at the same time, just the space of the blocks, the average block in a European city is 100 meters square In Brasilia, it's 300 meters square, so it's three times the size from block to block. We see here an image of the presidential palace where the president's office is, and reference here to the people with this sculpture here. Interestingly enough, as you kind of picked up on in the video we saw at the beginning, there was a lot of politics that kind of revolved around the making of this city. We see here kind of this ramp that leads up to the presidential palace. This water that was placed in front, although it has some aesthetic quality, creating this building almost as an island, it also served functionally as a way to kind of control the people from a security standpoint from the building.
A moat,
exactly. And again, we see these images very stark, strong lines that we see picked up. And here a sketch, an early sketch by Niemeyer that shows the emphasis of this ramp coming up, and then these sails that support the building itself. Again, very strong elements. And we're going to see here through some of these buildings, he takes these sails and he interprets them in different variations from building to building. So here we see the Supreme Court, again, used very similar structure, but aesthetically modifications or variations on the same theme. An overview here. This is again the Congress, the court here on the left, and the presidential palace on the right. And you can see this plaza that's created between the three. This three here, which is at the head of the plane, and you can see, you know, that this is going down the fuselage of the plane. And then you can see the wings off in the distance here that spread to the right and the left. But this main mall here, the composition of the three at the head of the plane is really, in Costa's mind, is the crux of the design composition.
Let me go back and tell one thing that you may go later and tell me, but also here you see all these buildings. I mean, there it seems to be a small little Lego thing when you see in the photo, but each one of these buildings, look at them. I'm going to show you one. It's like what, 8 or so, 9 or 10 floors high. And each one of them is has a secretary. One is secretary of whatever, you know, finances or tourism and sports, whatever. So each one of these buildings will also be part of government and have, you know, its own function. So everything is pretty connected and close to each other. And they can, you know. So it's all planned like that.
Right. And so each one of these is like a ministry. Like over here on the left here, this is the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, which we'll get into here a little bit going forward. This one was designed by Niemeyer. These subsequent ones, as you can tell, it's almost kind of a repetition of the design, had a little bit less that was put into it as far as these initial buildings that were created. You see here, this is a protest that's happening on this open plaza. Again, it's much like the National Mall that we think of, some of the historic things that happened yesterday, Martin Luther King Day being one of those. Speeches that he delivered at the mall, and so you can see that this concept of this open space that we talked about with relative to like the UN with Niemeyer is this idea of creating these open plazas, so that way the city really can be occupied by the people, and to create this idea of a city by the people. Another thing that's interesting is that this is the head of the plane you see here. This is the what we've been just looking at. Out beyond that, as we head to the lake, this man-made lake, out at the very tip, at the forefront, is the presidential residence at this point here. And this is...
let me say this. Remember this name, Alvorada, and it means dawn or daybreak.
And significantly, dawn, this being out to the east of Brasilia, is back here, main proper. East of that is at the farthest point east, right along the lake, is the residence where the president resides. This is his house that we're seeing here. Again, you can see the sails interpreted in another fashion, almost a metaphor here to these women here sitting. But the aesthetic is very modern, very sparse. And also, again, scale, like you see here with the human figures, you can see how much this the scale comes into play. If we move further down the mall here, what Flavio was just speaking about, we have flanking the green path is these ministry buildings. And also, I'll point out what's interesting too is that the these paths that crisscross through the lawn. These were paths as you would pass from like one ministry to another during the day. These crossing of the grass, initially the grass was kind of left green, and over time a trail or a path would kind of be laid in just from the foot traffic. And then over time those paths would then became paved. But the crossing here is something that again speaks to the human pedestrian aspect of the city. This is the ministry of the foreign culture that's on the mall there. A slightly different interpretation of the sales, a little bit more.
It's the State Department.
Right.
It's the Brazilian State Department.
And then in the interior, a very dramatic staircase that really sculpturally defines the space. Again, very sparse interior. You'll notice that just as we have outside with the space between the buildings, we have the same kind of sparse interior space as well. Again, of course, this interior can function and be used for various functions, has that kind of adaptability, but at the same time, the design intent was to create the same character and sense of space on the interior that you have on the exterior. This vastness. And then that takes us to at the far end here, the mall over here on the right. But then as we work our way down the tail of the plane, what's interesting is these paths that were straight start to take this curvilinear patterns that works its way down. This is the wings here that we're seeing that cross transversely. But this is almost kind of like the turbulence of coming off of the wings of the plane, working to this more kind of an informal aspect. We're seeing here at the far end, this is the Congress as well as the ministries as we work down the mall here. And so then we get to these more kind of playful abstract forms as at the farther end, which gets into commerce and various things. This is a museum, the National Museum. Very futuristic forms that Niemeyer was trying to create. Again, dreaming a city out of kind of nothingness. And so it's not looking at anything from the past as far as past styles, past architectures. This is trying to envision something of the future. And as you can see, you know, very much of that kind of futuristic feel. And again, another human figure in here for scale, and just the starkness and the cleanness of the line, almost to the point where it's almost like an abstract painting, not even a real structure. This is the National Cathedral. And then from this sketch here, you can see the concept. Again, the eye figure showing kind of the perspective from within side and this view looking up through these space. This is the structure of the cathedral here. And the idea was to create this kind of almost floating transparency between the structure, kind of an uplift through. And so from the inside, you see with the stained glass that's put in, that it really creates this floating aspect. You see the figures here floating up into the heavens above. And then finally, as we worked our way down the tail, there's a monument to the president who was kind of like the one that put forth in this campaign pledge to create this new capital. And we see in this monument a figure, again, a reference to the people that this city is kind of built for. Very abstractly modern kind of depiction here. Kind of like, you know, this uplifting of creating this this city out of nothing off the ground. And then finally, that brings us to the last element of Brasilia, which is the residential quadrants. This is kind of looking in at the wing of the plane. And this, if we zoom in here just a minute, you can see the this quad, what they called super quadras, was this block unit that would define this courtyard space. And with inside that, there would be these slabs of residential apartment buildings. And these slabs would then define, again, much in composition, each one of these quads. They would be laid out in different variations from quad to quad. But then these would define the residential space that all of these workers that came to town to build this city, as well as then subsequently all the people that would work at the government would reside. And these quads came from a design that Costa had prior, about a decade prior, I think it was in Rio. And this was a housing plan, very similar in concept, where he placed the apartment buildings within this kind of landscaped green environment. And so these concepts of infiltrating the setting with this greenery was very central to these quads. And the idea was that each one of these quads would have two rows of trees that would encircle this apartment block. And that would be in lieu of what you would traditionally find within these walled-off type gated communities. This was the idea, was that these trees would then create a soft edge to each one of these blocks. And you can see here the rendering of that, the trees not only encircle the quad, but then also infiltrate in between. As well as between the quads, you see a quad here, a quad here, and they work their way down. There's also this green kind of boulevard space that works its way down. This is the axis of the wings working its way down towards the city proper. And so very much, if you recall back from the previous photos, I mean, all this greenery is brought in. It has been created from this space. And so you have this mixing of man-made kind of built apartment blocks, and then the natural nature kind of infused together. And this concept of this kind of green garden city is something that was very popular at that time around the world. Corbusier spoke of this much as well. But this blending together is what, in their minds, was a way to kind of soften the city and to create, to take away kind of the density that you find in a typical urban setting, the congestion or the density, and to allow the city to almost to breathe. Here's a example close up of one of these apartment blocks, the greenery that kind of really envelops it. Another strategy also that was interesting is that these were limited to six stories, which is the height of a building prior to the advent of the elevator. Six stories was the maximum that a building would go up, because that's the most floors that most people would walk on a daily basis. This keeps the building to a human scale. Even though elevators were present, they wanted to bring back this idea of a pedestrian size structure. And this was the way of taking this city that had enormous scale in plan that spread out and create a human scale on a daily basis. So that way, when you lived within this city, you wouldn't feel completely lost in this vast, large expanse. And so like within these quads, you see here, between the buildings, you see the places for children to play, the green open space, again, the plaza that we found in the government central portion. That same concept is brought back to these quads, where you have this open green space. for the people to occupy and to live. And that's really where the life of the city happens. Another thing that's also of interest, this is an idea that Corbusier pushed, which was these idea of pilotis, which is these columns placed on the ground level. And so then the entire apartment block is lifted up onto these columns. And the idea is that by doing this, not only does it permit you to see through the building at the ground level, so the building doesn't block off and become a wall to the space, it allows the space to flow freely underneath the building. And this also detaches the building from the ground, is also just metaphorically an idea where by detaching the building from the ground is no longer purchased. It's no longer privatized, because the ground continues unimpeded. This public space of the garden and the court continues on through, even underneath this more private area of these apartments. And so this is a way of kind of like through architecture, bringing like a social change to the way that people think of private property or private land being public in its use, and also just physically being the public being able to walk and pass through right underneath these apartment buildings. And also, interesting enough, it makes, by doing this, it makes the building, renders it without a front, because you enter these buildings from underneath. So you would walk down inside here, and then you would enter a door and go up into the elevated building. And it's also interesting enough in Brasilia here with the idea of this plane or this bird as the urban planning of the city. You have these buildings in flight as well. So you have all this lifting off of the ground, going back to this idea. And we actually, in the video segment we just heard, there was a quote I wrote down here that was spoken by Niemeyer. He said that floating in the darkness of the plateau, he was trying to create these pure white buildings. And so, you know, this idea of floating or flying or elevating or lifting off of the ground, almost to this ethereal type future, is this idea of what they were trying to create. And then one last point that I wanted to show you here before passing it back off to Flavio is that going back to this original sketch by Costa, where he put in this arc, the cross wings where we have the residential boulevard. This arc is significant because it's there. It was a project. It was back in Brazilian Pavilion in Milan in 1964. Costa was asked to design the pavilion, design an installation for the Brazilian Pavilion. For the international that was going on in Milan in 64. And he came up with this concept here that we're seeing, this sketch, where he took hammocks and he suspended them from the ceiling. And these hammocks then suspended from the ceiling on the walls here, flanking to the two sides, he put up images on the walls of the Brazilian beach on the one side, as well as Brasilia on the other, images of Brasilia, the city, on the flanking side. And here you can see a little, in his sketch, you can see a plan here where he's showing the circulation through this space and these images that kind of line the perimeter with the hammocks that are suspended in the center. And the reason this is significant is that Costa, for many years, was the head of one of the national departments on conservation and the study of Brazil's colonial past and history. And so for a designer like Costa and Niemeyer, where they're looking towards the future and they're trying to create an architecture of the future, but at the same time, he was tasked with preserving Brazil's past, was an interesting task. And so here, he used this hammock, which is a Brazilian colonial device, as a metaphor for this bridge between the past and the present. And so these images that he put up of the Brazilian coastline, kind of referring back to this colonial past, and then Brasilia being the future. And to the point where he actually had a quote that he said, and Flavio, it's in Portuguese, which he speaks much better than I.
Mesmo prova que descansava.
Yep.
Okay. So he added, he stated, the same the same people who rests in the hammocks knew when needed to build a new capital, new city in within 3 years. So that's exactly what it is. It's translated there.
Yeah, right.
That's what it's there.
So it's interesting that here he saw these Brazilian people that even though historically these hammocks were used for leisure, a life of in fact, the name of the installation for this Brazilian was called Relax. And so was the theme of this installation. And so, you know, he's pointing out the leisure nature of this Brazilian lifestyle of this hammock. But at the same time, these same people that they can be found reclined in a hammock in 3 years' time can create a city out of nowhere when needed. And so this is kind of like the way that he ties together the past and the future in this regard.
Yay.
And one last. So this is an image. A recreation of that installation for the Venice Biennial just a few years ago, 2012, there was within the Brazilian pavilion, they recreated this piece from in the 60s.
Well, I think I'm gonna do a room like that in my house. Right. So you got to know a lot about Brazil right now. Thanks, Matt. That's really incredible. So, yeah, and to know so much about the city, just like Pittsburgh, right? I wanted to show you one little thing that Matt saw, what I think was number 52 here, that I know of Brasilia. If you see the roads, there are all these little round things and, you know, all there are no, and talking, going back to last week where we see corners. Brasilia, if you have you go with your car, maybe rent a car, but then you need to drive stick shift because Brazilian cars are very seldom stick shift. You have, you know, very seldom automatic. It's all stick shift. So make sure you drive stick shift before going. You see, there are no corners. There are no like traffic lights. None of that, at least in that part, in the, you know, on the wings and all that. You can keep on driving and you go in and out and you want to go to a different place. You go from here to this road and back. And so you in principle, the principle is that you would not stop. It's not necessarily that it happens today. After so many years, we're talking about a city that is now 60 years old, right? So about, or you know, 61. Yeah, pretty much 60 years old. So that's it. Okay, stop share. Here we go. Okay, I think we have enough material to think for a whole week. Why don't we start now? How do you make music out of that? And that's a good question because, so as this was being built, they were already thinking what human things are we gonna put in this whole, you know, in the city. And the president was really connected to many things, including music, and said, let's try to get the most, you know, important, the most famous composer of Brazil, at least popular music, to write something, but something big, something, you know, not another song that would be great, but a real symphony. And even though that was not Jobim's specialty, he could play piano, he learned classical music, and he had the, you know, the knowledge to at least try to do within his means a whole symphony. And he really wrote a symphony in five movements with the text, which is not, a few parts are sung, but most of it is spoken, like long spoken. And it was supposed to be a concert for the inauguration of Brasília, and there was going to be lights and everything. It didn't happen. The concert happened later, not really at the exact time of the inauguration. But the symphony exists, and that's what we're going to talk a little bit about, unless somebody really has a real important question that you guys want to ask about Brasília and the construction and the architecture, because, you know, maybe now it's the time before we go, then it's going to be music the rest of the session. Anybody? Something that is buzzing in the, say, I need to know that. I don't know if Matt will have the answer, but feel free.
I have a question.
Okay.
So those housing squares, it looked like most of the buildings were the same size. And just in my brain, I was saying six floors, six buildings across, front and back, 72 apartments or condos. Is that
more
in the ballpark at all? And how many, what is the population there? And is there enough housing today?
Well, I don't know the population currently. But it's the apartment blocks housed quite a bit more than the math that you're coming up with there. The six floors, each one of those quads, the super quadras they were called, each one of those housed 11 of these apartment slabs, or they call them slabs, apartment buildings. So you had six floors times 11 is 66 floors per quad. And there were 96 of these super quadras. So 66 times 96 is the number of floors that you would have of essentially of apartments within just the wings. That said, interestingly enough, a lot of the workers that lived within the city moved out beyond this kind of initial airplane urban plan to surrounding cities, satellite cities, smaller cities off of Brasília the proper. This was partly because the cost of living was more affordable in those portions. Interestingly enough, when in the video that we saw in the beginning there, all of these workers by the thousands came to the city to help build the city up. And then they stayed on in the city once the city was built. They didn't go back. Not most of them stayed on, but they're by doing so, their quality of life or the cost of living, they were able to acquire twice on average about twice of what they could make back in their towns that they came from. And despite that, these workers that were living in kind of these satellite cities within the wings. Those over time appreciated in value even more, just because it was these now had a history to it. What was once prior, really nothing.
Yeah, right. It that was in the 60s. Today it is different. You know, the center still exists, but it grew a lot around. So and a lot more people live there. And the workers really that were living in Brasília in those, and even during the construction and afterwards, they were living like in the suburbs outside Brasília. And there are exactly what Matt said, satellite towns that exist to this day. Right. Anyway, let's go a little bit to the music. We can always go back and try to intertwine these two things. So let me show you. Let me see, here it is. What we have is the symphony in five movements. And Jobim himself describes let me talk about maybe three or so movements. We will have time today to talk about 10 minutes each or so. So this is Jobim's, here it is, what he wrote. He wrote a text, which is in the record that you saw the cover. And he says, the first movement is called the Desert Highland. Brasília is in a highland, the desert, and it was desert when it started, as you know. So the music begins with two horns in fifths. It's really just of the whole orchestra, two single horns playing fifths. Fifths in music, when you have a chord, you have normally the first, the third, and the fifth of the scale, and then you build a C major chord. You have three notes, C, E, and G. If you miss the third and just have the fifth, fifth means five notes in between, like C and G, you don't know if it's C major, C minor, or C something. It becomes this, you know, sort of more mysterious sound. So, and it becomes, in other words, empty. And that's his way of trying to bring this emptiness, the vast emptiness that we saw in the movie, you know, evokes the solid. That, and this is Jobim's quote, the old solitudes without sorrow that the poet Vinicius de Moraes tells us about. And it's on the text. And the majesty of the fields without edges that have been quiet till then for millennia. The spirit of the place prevails. Two flutes then afterwards lyrically comment on the infinite colors of sunrises and sunsets on a harmonic background of tremolo strings. We're going to exactly listen to that. The mystery of things prior to the man is exposed in a clear and transparent light. Where in the general fields, at the end of the day, you could hear the cry of the partridge and birds are, as I said before, Jobim really loved birds. So when you hear the cry of the partridge, the melancholic hoot of the jaó, jaó is another bird that answers the partridge that happens in the symphony. You'll see in a minute. Sometimes, at the water's edge, the weave of branches and lianas appear, colors darkens, the infinite horizon is filled with the colors of the twilight, and the theme of the plateau is heard once again. The theme of the plateau is exactly the beginning that you're going to listen, two horns in fifths. So he had a plan. Actually, it's not only the architect had a plan. He had a real plan, a musical plan to start his symphony. And before I show you more, let's then listen to that. Let me see if this, which one I'm going to use. I have two possibilities for that. I'm going to go with this one here. Okay. So this is an orchestra. It's a São Paulo orchestra, recorded much later, but it's still the same piece. So here we go. The vast emptiness. The flutes, birds. For a moment. Oops. No. Thank you. the other bird, Jaó. So what you just heard is exactly the beginning, as he says, remember, look again, this is the beginning. It ends exactly the same way. Let me show you for a second the bird player. Remember that? Let's see where, there he is. This man, so I'm going to talk about him for a second. Here it is. His name is Paulo Jobim. He is the son of Jobim. He's playing there. He went there for this specific concert. And actually, so how this music has been played? Because there were only manuscripts. Okay, let me close here. There were only manuscripts of the piece until 2001, I would say. So let me show you for a second exactly the manuscript of this piece. This is Jobim's handwriting. Let me, I have to go here and share my screen. There's a reason why I'm telling you this, because it has something to do with Pittsburgh. So you see, O Planalto Deserto, the desert high, there's all this. This is the opening page. And you can see how much open space. This is the whole orchestra. It has two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, horns, trombones, everything in the beginning is empty except for the horns. This is, again, Jobim's handwriting. A few measures later, the bassoons enter and the clarinets, here it is. Now, it is very hard to play from a manuscript like that. Of course, there were parts. In 2000, I wanted to do this piece in Brazil, and I contacted Paulo Jobim, who we just saw, and we decided to do a new edition of Brasília. What happened? At that time, software for music was not today. Is very easy. You find easy software, you can put music in 2 minutes. You've seen me doing with software here when I do music. In those days was kind of starting, and Carnegie Mellon had one of the classes that music students had was working with software. We hired a student of Carnegie Mellon, music student, in 2001 to put all those manuscripts in musical form. And the final result is this. So what you had, the manuscript, became this. And this is so from, it's, and it's done in Pittsburgh. So today every orchestra that plays in the world those pieces will play from this, I don't even remember. Actually, I don't remember his name. His name was, I think, Adam something. So a student in the music department who had this gig of putting the music. So in a way, Pittsburgh does have a little bit to do with this whole musical enterprise. Anyway, so here we go. You saw the manuscripts. So this is the first movement. The first movement really shows the immense vastness of the land, not much, it's a very short movement. The second movement now is called The Man, because all you needed was not only the president, but all the people involved in creating Niemeyer, Lúcio Costa, and the workers. But so he, Jobim himself, let me see, he has a little text about The Man. So before we listen to the music, I think it's interesting to just see how Jobim describes the music, which is here. Where is it? Here we go. So, the man. The second movement deals with man, his spirit of conquest, his violence, his strength, his desires, and his sufferings to reach the highlands. I mean, as you saw, they came from very far away places in Brazil, all those workers, like really, but I'm talking about 1,000 miles or more, some of them. As I was writing the music for this part, the following image formed in my mind. A cart is painfully dragging itself up the mountain. Man instigates animals. That it's Google Translate, so it's not the best, but I put it this like 10 minutes before we started the session. The march accelerates and the song appears. So there's chant to which nature responds, calm and free from desires. But man wants things. His strong arm, streaked with thick veins, rises. A sharp blade cuts through the branches of this undisciplined nature. The trail goes deeper into the sertão. Sertão is the hinterland, is where this, you know, the Brasília was created. Man would plant his cross, as you know, Matt talked a lot about it, that on the plateau. So this is the second movement. I'm going to show you this, but in a different way. Here is the music itself. I want you to listen to this, and you're going to see that there are clear, those of you who know Rite of Spring, for instance, Stravinsky, or some of Stravinsky's music, going to clearly listen to some influences. And Jobim already said in his life, many times, he had three main influences, even for writing Girl from Ipanema and Desafinado and all those songs that we know. He had actually three very important influences. He loved Stravinsky, Debussy, and we heard that harp in the first movement. I mean, if you listen, if you know Debussy, it certainly comes from there. And he also was very connected to Villa-Lobos music. So you're gonna, this piece, at least Villa-Lobos and Stravinsky, sorry, both Stravinsky and Villa-Lobos are very present. I'll play a little bit later of Stravinsky and you can compare, but here it is, the movement. Let's see, it's how long, it's not terribly long, so I'm sure you can easily listen to all of it. Here you go. Thank you. So this is the second movement. Now, let me play very short little bit of Rite of Spring for those who are not so familiar. This is kind of almost the end of it. Now, listen to the beginning of the Jobim part. Starts with that, but around here. Like these irregular rhythms and the orchestration and all that is pretty similar. The other one is Villa-Lobos. And so when Villa-Lobos was a cellist, he has the famous pieces for eight cellos and all that. So Jobim uses them here, right? Cellos. You listen to the rhythm. First, it starts with this rhythm on the upper strings. So I'm going to play for you a very short little bit of a Villa-Lobos piece, which is his first Baquiana Brasileira. Listen to the rhythm and then the cellos. And you see, it's like something built on a rhythmic ostinato, something that repeats itself many times. So it's exactly what he does in this part. Here's the rhythm. No, it's here, sorry. Here we go. This is his rhythm, and then the cellos. So certainly it's not a very original Jobim, like you know bossa nova things and all those songs that we know. He used the knowledge and he took from other composers, and he was very open about that at all times. He never said it's, you know, of course it's his melody, it's his music, but it's certainly with clear influences. So far we have two movements. Any question, anything that so far, then we go to the, before we go to the third one, anybody, but important and interesting for everybody. I'm always open to listening to you. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Nobody. Okay. So I'll keep going. All right. So, the third movement, let's go to, we have some time. Good. Let's go to this one. I'm going to show you a couple of things. I'm going to go back. Let's go back here to my screen. Okay, we don't need this anymore, at least not for now. I'm going to use it in a moment, but not yet. I was going to show you what we just heard. This is also the score that was created here in Pittsburgh by that student at CMU. So as you can see here, that is, for instance, the orchestra is much fuller. It uses many more instruments, those strings, you know, and this, all these Stravinsky things that we just heard, it's all there. Then we have the rhythms of the cellos, everything, every single note you heard is here. It's from this score. You can see the instruments that he uses: piccolo, two flutes, oboe, clarinets, bassoons, horns, trumpets, four trumpets, three trombones, timpani, and whole strings. So again, we edited this, if I remember right, 2001. Okay, and with that, we also did, let me see if I have it here. It's somewhere. Oh, here we go. So just for you to understand, I think it's So the building blocks, since we're talking also about architecture, the building blocks of the music itself, this is what the flute player of this movement we just heard would see. That's his part. It's what we did also in Pittsburgh. That's why we did it. So they would have like clear, easy to read parts. So this is for the flutes. There are two flutes, as you remember, one, two, the two notes. And this is the oboe, this is the clarinet, bassoon, horn, you know, a few horns, three trumpets, four trumpets actually, and trombones. This is much more, which is, you see, this trombone player plays only this little few things, gets the same money as a violin player. Look how much he plays. That's that rhythm. So that's, he plays all this. This is just for that specific part, the violin part. That's what they play. So, and then you of course have violas, cellos, double basses, also all the strings, cello. Look how much more. One page, two pages, violins have more, and at the same time, you look here, the clarinet has three lines. That's the life of an orchestral musician. Unfair, but hey, choose. So if you're going to choose an instrument to play in an orchestra, choose carefully, okay? Anyway, so let's go to the third movement, which is this other one called... The arrival of candangos. Candangos are the workers that came from all over Brazil, as we mentioned. So these 60,000 people who came at first, then there were more, but like just to start. So even having, putting people to live where there was nothing, all that was, it's an incredible, you know, enterprise, just that. Most of these people came from the northeast of Brazil, and the northeast of Brazil is in itself a dry, arid region, and there are a lot of poor people, that's a reality, and they needed work, and it was a good opportunity. That's why they completely changed their lives. To this day, there are many of the people who live in Brasilia are descendants of these original, you know, people who decided in the 60s. To go to Brasília. For that reason, why I'm telling you that, for that reason, Jobim uses for this movement a very northeastern kind of rhythm, which is called baião, and is something very dancey and very, you know, probably those of you who know Brazilian music certainly heard some baião. Here it is how we write it. B-A-I-A-N with the till. Baião. So I'm going to play for you a regular baião from the Northeast that has nothing to do with Jobim. Just for you to know what brought Jobim to bring his third movement when he talks about the workers. So it's this very rhythmic thing, very, it's danceable, of course, people dance, so it is that. We don't need this anymore. Let's go to the Jobim, what he did with the baião. This is a different orchestra, I think, but same conductor with our Pittsburgh parts. Thank you. Same instruments. Okay, so, I mean, now you know what, three movements so far of this symphony. Questions, complaints, don't like it. Tell me something. Nobody? All right. I see. No question, anything? I see that Matt was taking notes or something. Anything you want to say based on this? Or
yeah, it's interesting that, you know, kind of paralleling back to the architecture, the built structures, that the this last movement, the third movement, becomes a lot more alive, I think, than the previous. Like the second movement is very much that kind of driven will of power type feel, but this last one's a little bit more playful, a lot more life comes to it, which makes sense that it's kind of the movement of the workers, because much like in the master plan of the wings, where the residential units, the quads, were located on the wings are the part of the plane that gives lift to the plane and takes that plane off the ground, is really, so it's the workers that give life and lift to not only the playing, but also the music too. So that's kind of, I thought it was an interesting parallel.
It is true. In a way, the two first movements is more like in a little philosophical. It's like, you know, the concept of, first of all, a building a city where there's nothing. That's the first movement. The second is man, but not the man physical. Is the man who will create, who will bring all that. Is still there is some. It's not really. The third one is in the ground. Your dance is those people there. I mean, it really is the music that the workers who were there knew. That Bayonne rhythm is like, you know, I don't know, going to, like, you know, in the 1800s to the West and having somebody with a harmonica playing and a banjo also, and all that.
Not to interrupt you, but also to Costa's point where he was trying to blend in the architecture, the colonial past with the future, this modernist future, that colonial, that the bayou that you're speaking of, that style, that type of music, mm-hmm. Is very colonial. It's kind of the historic part that he's trying to bring into this modern kind of composition, right. Which is interesting.
Absolutely. Well, Jobim does that. He really brings that. Right. Anything else?
No.
That's it. Okay. I mean, we had like 2:33. So I'm not going to bring you. I mean, I have a few things and let's not yet finish. If anybody needs to leave, please. But I have a short thing that has something to do with what I'm talking with Jobim. While they were in Brasilia, so what happened is that the president, Kubitschek, invited Jobim and Vinicius de Moraes to go to Brasilia, but it was, he says, it was nothing here. I used to go to the river here. It was to, you know, to the water, and there were birds and all that. Basically, they were, let me show you a few photos. You're going to see, there's a photo of them. Here we go. Where are, okay, photos. Here we go. Okay, I could open them all. Okay, oops, not really. Here we go. So this is, first of all, you see them opening. There were some woods around there also. So they really broke in and opened roads. They're trying to open a road here. Then this is both Vinicius de Moraes, who played guitar, and Jobim. He was thirsty. He liked actually, you know, other kind of drinks, but in the hour of the day, he was drinking water. I'll go back to that. Let me just quickly show you some photos. There they are in 1960, if I'm right, walking around Brasilia. So it's a photo of them. This is the president of Brazil in those days, Kubitschek. This is, as you saw, a little bit of the construction of Congress. This was the cross as it really started. That was the first thing that happened there. This you know exactly, you know better than I do. So I'm going to go back to this. They were there, and there was an engineer with them. Actually, it's the guy who took the photo, this very photo. And
Cardoza.
I don't remember his name, but yeah, there is a whole thing about that. It was one of the, but no, it's an engineer, like not Lúcio Costa, not that, or so. I don't. There is a text about him. Anyway, if somebody wants to know, I'll let you know later. Point is, he asked this engineer who was there already, "Is it okay to drink this water?" He said, "Oh yeah, good water, água de beber, water to drink, camará," which is a way like so, fellow or something like that. And Vinicius de Moraes started playing on these words. And they, on that specific very day, wrote a piece of music called Water to Drink. The song, some of you might know, but some of you yes or no, let me play one of the versions of that. Do I have it here? I hope I have. Where is it? Maybe it's here. Here it is. Oh, I thought for a moment I don't. I do have it. I did my homework and prepared. Here it is. So there are dozens of that, dozens of, you know, interpretations of that song. So listen to this. Tell me who's going to be singing there.
Your love is rain, my heart the flower. I need your is in your power. Will I wither and fade or bloom to the sky?
Water to drink, he's singing.
Give the flower water to drink. Give the flower water to drink.
How do you guys like Frank Sinatra's Portuguese? So that's both Frank Sinatra and Jobim singing this song. So from that photo that you saw, you know, it, see what a little trivial act of just going to the little brook and drinking water, you know, you can move the world and do that. So that's the best way I could find to finish this little lecture. So you got to know a lot about Brazil, something that I believe most of you did not know about Jobim, even though I'm sure you know, most of you know a lot of his music, and of course the architecture and building a whole city. Anybody wants to say something?
Flavio.
Yeah.
At that time, didn't Jobim write the score to Black Orpheus?
It was around that time, yes.
It was so in the that 60s, rhythm yes. With right. Being yeah. Introduced, I think, to
right.
Us.
Right, possibly. I mean, it's a movie. Topic. But the movie Black Orpheus is made by a French, in fact.
Oh,
it's,
it is.
And it's like the whole thing, it's like the whole myth, the story of Orpheus and Eurydice in the slums of Rio and everything. But it's a kind of international look on Brazil in a way, but yeah, it is around that time, so
it was so popular,
right? Exactly. But then Girl from Ipanema was popular, and then yeah, Sinatra right. had three records with Jobim. He never recorded any other record just with one person, so I think with Jobim he had three different ones, so it, you know, was certainly an incredible thing for Brazilian music. It changed Brazilian music, and it changed the city. So this whole combination is very unique, you know. And to write a symphony, what is another symphony for? Do you know any other city that had merited a symphony itself? Anybody? I know at least one. There is a city in this world called Pittsburgh that has a symphony, which was written by Hindemith, the famous, you know, German composer. Hindemith has, I think his second symphony is Pittsburgh Symphony. It exists. Google, listen, it's available. It's on many places and it's in the library. I'm not sure you're going to like. If you have a chance, listen, we'll talk. And tell me if you like next week. How about that? It exists, really. There are certainly others, I would think. You know, and of course, Leonard Bernstein wrote so many pieces about New York. And so we can, if we start talking, there are pieces for a specific city. But for the inauguration, I don't know if Las Vegas had an inauguration. And I don't know if Las Vegas has a symphony. If anybody finds out, just let me know. All right. Anybody else?
Thank you, Flavio.
Hey, you're so welcome. Great, real pleasure to bring different things, you know, like, you know, spend an hour and a half on a Tuesday afternoon. Matt, anything you want to say before we check off?
No, it was a pleasure.
It is, really. Always open. We learn a lot, in the guarantee. We have, like, discussions. I don't know. I hope you, if you learn...
Thank you.
Fraction.
Thank you to you both.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Absolutely. Big pleasure. All right. Hey, I see. Yeah, that's right. That's Frank Sinatra. I'm seeing the text. Absolutely. Yay. We knew that. All right. See you next week. Same time. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right.